Hi, today is March 29th, 2024. I'm recording this on Good Friday. The market is closed. Did a stream today. I streamed myself playing some Tekken. It was pretty cool. And then got to go off a little bit later to work on the website. A lot of cool changes are coming. I got a lot of work to do. Got a lot of work also done this week that's been released early because the release was getting kind of large. But today we're going to be talking about some of the things that we should keep in mind going forward from a little bit of anecdotal advice that I have for you in my experience of seeing people lose lots and lots of money. And speaking of losing money, I do want to talk about an IPO that, you know, I missed because I didn't release last week's episode. It's recorded, but decided not to release it. Maybe I'll release it another time. But Reddit came out with an IPO. And Reddit IPO'd at around $50.44. At least that's what, by the time we were allowed to touch it as the, like, just a regular retail trader, it was trading at $50.44. I've seen some Reddit posts where some people were able to get in early access IPOs for about like $35. If you're like an active member of Reddit, you have enough karma, your account is old enough, all that good stuff. But by the time we were able to touch it, it was $50.44, and then the next following day, it went down around 10%, down to like 46%. And then over the course of like the next like trading day, after dipping down to 46, it just made a run 40% higher, up to $65. And then since then, it's gone down 24%, is now chilling at $49.32. So the Reddit IPO is right about where it was originally released to the public at $49, where when we were able to touch it, it was about $50. So we'll see where that goes. Maybe we continue trading a bit sideways, maybe big ups and big downs, but maybe we just continue trading sideways, or maybe, like most IPOs, we continue trading down. Looking at Reddit and just how volatile it was, there was a lot of FOMO going on. I know I caught some of that FOMO too when it was making that epic 40% gain after going down like 9%, 9 or 10% on its opening day. When it was going up, you know, I can imagine so many people buying calls, or, you know, equally maybe the same number of people buying puts, you know, to time the bottom, because the general consensus on Reddit, on Wall Street Bets, was that the Reddit IPO was going to be terrible. So you can imagine just how many people got bear trapped on that first day when it went down at 8 or 9%. And then from that moment on, it ripped another 40% and went up $19. And timing that with puts would have felt really bad. And then this entire movement up, you might consider trying to buy puts. And finally, again, we're at this original IPO price. It is extremely difficult to time calls and puts. And I think Reddit is putting that in full display for everyone to learn from. It's incredibly hard to guess which direction a stock will go, especially if you don't have good historical data as well. Not saying that you can look at a chart and know exactly where the stock would go, but like, just imagine if you had the ability to zoom out into like a 5-year chart. Granted, now we only have about 2 weeks worth of chart data for Reddit, so just keep that in perspective. I have also been trading Reddit. I've been trading Reddit in my 5K account and my 300K account, my main account, both of which I've done buy rights in. Meaning I buy 100 shares and then I sell a covered call. But what's made my positions work out for me so far that I'm green on in both my 5K account and my main account is that I sold my covered call deep in the money. We went over that and how the math works and how all that works on stream, where I'm able to do the math, show the math, you know, typing it in the calculator and all that fun stuff, and drawing on the MS Paint website, and, you know, helping people understand. You know, if you sell a covered call, it doesn't always have to be out of the money. You can choose at the money or even in the money, just as long as you know where your break even is. There is something to be said, however, about being too defensive with your covered calls, right? Like, you can imagine that selling deep in the money all the time can't necessarily be a good thing. And too much of one thing is bad, right? Like, if I choose to be too defensive, I will lose considerably to a very bullish market. Like, for example, maybe the trend, you know, of what of us going up since the beginning of this year continued, yeah, I'd probably be kind of left in the dust. But when my instincts tell me that I should play a little bit more defensively, then deep in the money cover calls make a lot of sense to me, where that's the risk reward that I'm looking for. If we go down, I benefit a lot. If we trade flat, I also benefit a lot. And if we continue up, then I'll have a position where I can maybe readjust. I can then say, hey, you know what? I'll have these shares get called away deep in the money. I'll make my next one either less deep in the money, maybe at the money, consider further out the money. But choosing a defensive posture when your instincts tell you, hey, you know, this market seems like a little shifty, a little sus, I might decide, hey, you know what, I want to take a defensive posture. And then I'm willing to maybe start selling further out the money after my initial shares get called away. But I would rather be too defensive but have my money invested than to sit idle. As you know, I'm a full-time trader, software developer. I mean, I'm doing my own thing. I do Theta Game full-time. So it feels extra bad when my money is sitting idle because I don't necessarily have money coming into my account anymore because I just don't have the extra wages to do that, right? Like everything that I'm making is currently going to rent or the expenses of keeping the website, podcast, and stream alive. So also just shout out to the patrons that help keep the services up and help support me. But that's my entire point. Is like, if I think right now for me personally and why it feels so good to do deep in the money buy rights is because I don't have a dollar cost average amount that I'm putting back into my account from my paycheck. So instead of sitting idle, I'd rather just be considered maybe too defensive, especially during a shaky market. If I felt really good about the market, I would definitely maybe consider a buy right, but it'd be out of the money, right? I'd want more gains of intrinsic value when the stock market's going up so that I can stay in line with SPY. But for right now, for what it's worth, I mean, let's do the quick math right now. 41,300. I'm at 13.67%, and then SPY stock this year is at 10.67. So I'm beating SPY about 3% for this year, which is, you know, it's pretty good. I was beating it a lot more early in the year, but my my trades have traded really flat as of recent. Right now, my profit loss for the 300K portfolio is around like 41K. And I've been like hovering like between 37 to like 43 for quite some time now, right? Like I'm waiting for the market to give me a signal, like say like I don't want to maybe continue to sell so deep in the money anymore, but we'll see where the market goes. Right now, like just give me a quick synopsis of where my portfolio is at. It's pretty defensive, I'd say. I have a buy right on Costco, which is buying 100 shares, selling a covered call. I have about 300 shares of AMD with the cash secured put. I have two buy rights on NVIDIA, and I have one buy right going with Palo Alto Networks. In the 5K portfolio, I'm up for the year, 15.88%, also beating SPY. Since I started this account in November, and it hasn't been a year yet, I'm up 39%, so that's pretty cool. Right now, I'm in a AMD put credit spread, an Ulta put credit spread, and a Reddit buy right. Feels pretty cool being able to trade Reddit and not have my account be completely destroyed. Because again, here in my 5K account, where you know a buy right or a cash secure put on something like Reddit, which costs like you know 50, 40 bucks, it's more than half of my portfolio. So it's pretty dangerous, but there is a fun aspect to my 5K account, which I like indulging in sometime for the content. So I have more updates on that a little bit later. But this last Thursday or yesterday, because I'm recording this on Friday, Reddit was down 17%, and into the close after hours is trading at $47.90, which is crazy because I mean, just the session before that, I think it went up like 40%. So very, very volatile. I think we all expected it and we're trading it. You know, it's just about staying alive and managing your position size. Speaking of position size, I think that kind of segues into our topic today. I was just like browsing Reddit, the R Theta Gang subreddit, as I usually do, as I'm like preparing to talk on the podcast. And there was this post that kind of reposted one of the most popular posts on the subreddit. It's titled, "You Think This Guy Rolled These Until They Were Worth Nothing and Felt Like a Genius?" And then the original post is a post titled, "I'm Dumb and I Feel Hopeless. Never Sell Naked Calls. My 100K loss turned into over 600K in minutes with AMC. I'm not even sure how I can recover from this." So looking at the original post, this person or this trader sold naked calls against AMC. And for those that don't know what selling naked calls means, it means that you're betting that the stock will stay below a certain price. Now, remember back in the day when AMC aped strong together, all that stuff, you know, people are buying AMC because they want to stick it to the man and they're trying to be sort of like a community and, you know, everyone's looking out for each other when everyone's just lying to each other and trying to make profit off each other and getting out without telling anyone else, all that good stuff, right? There were another collection of people that wanted to take advantage of this sort of volatility. But, you know, we all knew that AMC probably did not deserve that valuation. Rather, it was really just a lot of people buying AMC stock because they just wanted to get in. There was just a lot of FOMO. So naturally, someone that's very skilled but not have like a lot of real world experience might think selling naked calls against something this volatile would have been a great idea. For example, AMC might be trading at $8. You notice that there's a lot of FOMO, a lot of your friends, a lot of your aunts, uncles are trying to get into AMC, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to sell the naked calls that say that it won't go above like $64 or $60. And then boom, you know, someone talks about it on Wall Street Bets, the media starts getting attention on it, and everyone starts going in, and it shoots up to 100. When you just thought, hey, it was trading at $8. There's no way it passed 60. There's no way. And then it shoots up to 100. And then you sold multiple of these because you just thought there was no way that it could happen. And that's how you get in these sort of scenarios. And being totally fair to this person, I don't know what I would do in that scenario. Like, for example, this person originally lost 100K, okay? Or like they were sitting on 100K loss. What they did was they rolled the trade several times to say like try again, but you know, risk more and more money. You could think of it like playing roulette. You like lose one bet, but then you double the bet to try to like make it back. This person did that multiple times to try to come out a winner. But the market can remain irrational longer than you can stay solvent. I think that's the most cliche thing that I can say that makes sense of this irrational movement. And it's one of the main reasons why you shouldn't try to put ego or such a risky trade on off of emotion. There's no technical indicator in the world that should have justified that selling naked calls would have been a good thing on AMC. But you might think, Junie, you might just be really biased towards AMC. I know that you didn't trade it before and you might just be holding on to that fact. Well, I also didn't sell naked calls in GameStop. And I know a collection of people that sent me emails that I've read on the podcast that have also got with naked calls on GameStop. Naked calls are such a bad idea. Also, here's a story that I say pretty frequently on the podcast as well. User Storm Will Pass used to be a moderator on Wall Street Bets. He used to be so cool. I think he's still so cool. I loved him. I learned a lot from him. But he eventually became a meme because he sold calls, naked calls, against Tesla and then got destroyed. This was a long time ago. This was before the GameStop craze, before COVID. This was like around the time I was learning, maybe 2018, maybe 2017. But it's like 2017 to 2019. It was like that whole Tesla 420 debacle. But you can see that all of these things, Tesla, GameStop, AMC, everyone getting got with naked calls, very, very similar, right? So detect this sort of pattern. I know that there's also a collection of people that looked at Reddit and was like, dude, this stock is going down. There's no way. We're going to stick it to the man. Reddit's going to become a really bad platform. Now it's in the public domain and people are going to, you know, want shareholder value. So the experience is going to start sucking. I'm going to sell the 100 naked calls. I don't think Reddit will go above $100 because, you know, just this last Thursday, it went down $20. Dude, there's no reason for you to make that bet. Like, you could, there are so many other cool stocks that you would actually have positive vibes with. And I hate to go there with the Gen Z word, but like, you don't have to do, you don't have to time the top on this random stock or this meme occasion. You can literally trade something that hasn't like shown a downtrend, you know, in a very long time. You can say like, just trade Nvidia, be responsible a little bit with it, but like, don't go too crazy. You could trade AMD, you could trade Microsoft, you could trade, I don't know, I'm trying to give a non-tech example. Like, I was gonna say Intel, but that's also tech. I have a watch list right here. You could trade, let's see, you could trade Crocs. You know, Crocs has a good history of share buybacks. They're kind of fashionable right now. They give you good vibes. You could trade Costco. You know, there's a lot of cool stocks out there where you don't have to time the top. But also, because I know, you're like, Judy, you never want to time the top. That's the way you trade, so of course you're going to be biased. So I'll meet you in the middle. If you try to time the top, I'd say let's not do anything that has unlimited risk or unlimited loss to the upside, yeah? Like, the next time you want to sell a naked call, just sell a call credit spread. How about that? You know, you just cap the amount of money that you can make. You know, it's a little bit less alluring than keeping all that juicy premium that you sold for with just a naked call. But cap your gains and be safe, you know? Oh, it sounds so old and responsible. But the thought of being in a scenario where my losses could be infinite is one of the, I think, tiltable. I don't know. I feel like I've developed a good habit where if I feel like I'm about to get tilted, I'll just stop, meaning I'd exit. But like, I can never know. So I just don't put myself in that scenario. Kind of like heroin, I guess. Like, not even once. I'm not going to do it. Not even once. Just like selling naked calls. Nah, not for me. I ain't going to do it. Strangles is a heated debate. Okay. Very heated. There are so many passionate people that learn about Theta Gang, and maybe it's from the, you know, selling covered calls, you know, cash secured puts are cool, or maybe you start with like spreads and you learn that like, oh, call credit spreads exist, put credit spreads exist. Oh, you could do both of these at the same time and make it a short iron condor. Oh, you can take off the buy contracts and make this naked, and I could just sell a short strangle, because that's what a short strangle is. It's just a unprotected iron condor. It gives you a lot more premium up front. You get paid more, but the risk is crazy. It's crazy. I don't understand why people sign up for that stuff. Like, you might as well just sell the short iron condor. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it. So many people get got with stocks taking off to the upside, which is already a reason why I don't like doing short iron condors. I don't like doing neutral plays that lose going upwards. For example, some might say that, you know, cash secured puts or covered calls could be somewhat considered neutral, like especially depending on what strikes you start picking. But the iron condor actually loses if the stock market goes up too high, right? Cash secured put, you'll still benefit from the premium that you get to keep. Cover call, same thing if you manage your break even well. But short strangle, iron condor, it's very, very well hidden, but they don't do well in markets that just go up, right? You're gonna be caught rolling the call side or the upside over and over again, and maybe that turns into a tiltable loss where, you know, you had this max loss in mind, but you think, hey, any minute now the market's gonna correct, and then we get like another 2016 to 2019, and then you're like, I don't know, 1K loss turns into like 15K loss. I'm just being nice here. I've seen much bigger losses this year on short strangles. And I've seen huge losses in short iron condors from people doing too many of them. And it's tough. It's hard to time the market. And when you know that the market in general goes up, it's really hard for me to justify a short strangle or a short iron condor. I like the bottom side of it, right? Like at the bottom side of a short iron condor or the bottom side of a short strangle, bottom side of a short iron condor being a put credit spread, I love those. I do those all day. I just rather not do the call credit spread. I just rather, you know, either trade less when I think it's a little bit too crazy, or just keep my put credit spread a little bit further out the money, or, you know, all that fun stuff with put credit spreads. On a short iron condor, or sorry, a short strangle, the bottom side, dude, it's a cash secured put. We love those. So, you know, while it could help you buffer some, you know, if maybe you think that there is like more of a chance it can go down in the short term, you can buffer some of your of the call side with the amount of premium that you receive from the put side or the cash secured put. I can see some validity in that. That seems pretty cool. But at the end of the day, what happens if it just spikes? Like just a random news drop and the market continues going up? Because the market is incentivized to go up. It keeps the people, and this is where my tinfoil hat comes on, it keeps the people distracted from the real things that matter. And that's very subjective because everyone thinks the real things are different things. And that's what I'm talking about. It's okay to think different things, but it's a distraction, okay? So in general, people are going to do things and say things to make the market go up. And that's what you're fighting against, and you're openly signing yourself up to catch unlimited upside. It's just it cannot work from a unplanned perspective. And that's why I understand the majority of my audience to be, because I can say like, oh, you should have a trading plan, you should take notes, you should do trading logs. I could say that all day on the podcast, but you won't do it, and that's totally okay. But I'm just being real here, where I'm saying like, if you ever hear or see from someone else that short strangles are a good idea or selling naked calls is a good idea, I hope you can just hear in the back of your mind what I'm saying in this podcast episode of like, hey, Junie doesn't like them. Maybe I do a little bit more due diligence on why it's so dangerous before I actually do it. Because, you know, I get hyped when I learn something new too. You know, maybe I learned a new trading strategy on YouTube back in the day. You know, I learned about cash secured puts. I'm like, oh, I need to start doing these. These are crazy. Or I learned about covered calls. I'm like, what? I get to keep the money. And I start doing those. I was lucky enough to have, I think, Storm Will Pass, the user, the moderator on Wall Street Bets, to be my first real life example of someone getting got with selling naked calls. And it was very apparent to me of all the soft skills that had to go in to manage that position correctly. Because you could do everything mathematically. You can say, hey, if this goes up this percentage, I'll roll it by this percentage and I'll expect to have this max loss. And then no matter what, I'll exit when I'm down 10K. But the moment you're at 10K, you might change your mind and you might think like, okay, it's going to go back down. There's no way it's going to keep going back up. And then boom, the rip happens. And then you're down 50K. And then you're like, oh, there's no way I'm going to just sell for a loss right now. And then it doesn't go down. It starts creeping up, starts creeping up. You roll one more time and another spike happens. It's so, so dangerous. It can snowball very quickly. You know, if you're newer and you don't even know what a short strangle is, again, it's like a cash secured put and a short naked call put together. Man, I'd say for a lot of people that do these trades, maybe it's a little bit ego, but it's also straight up your intelligence. Like if you could be too smart for your own good sometimes. You know, I'm a firm believer in that. You mix that with ego, then it's really bad. But sometimes you get well-intentioned people that don't know any better. And I empathize with those people a lot as well. I empathize with both parties. I never want someone to lose money. And for example, I've said this many times before. I this opinion of me not liking short strangles or short naked calls is new. You know, I say it all the time, and people feel comfortable writing in to me an email talking about getting got with these, saying like, oh, you know, I should listen to you. And when I reply, it's all empathy. I'm not replying, I told you so or anything. Dude, I get it. You get hyped on something and, you know, your position sizing gets out of control. You thought it would win. Maybe your first few ones worked. You know, that's also one of the cooler parts about short strangles is on paper, they have a good chance of winning, right? It's the occasional really big movement in one direction that you got to start managing it. And what happens if the first one you have to manage is the big movement one? You know, maybe it's just like a little bit overwhelming. You start, got to do research, but then the stock is moving as you're like researching and then you're under more pressure. It just feels really, really overwhelming sometimes. So that's why I prefer. Ooh, can you guys hear that? That's my rice cooker. Do 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 do. That's why I prefer my simpler strategies of just doing cover calls and cash secured puts on my main portfolio. Because you know I'm trading $300,000 right now. The portfolio is at I think 341K because I'm now including my profit. You know when I'm talking about it, but 341K in a portfolio is nothing to play around with. That is like essentially my nest egg. It's what I care about. It's what I'm going to be potentially buying my house with. It's going to be, you know, where I withdraw from when I need to, when my checking account goes to zero, because, you know, your boy needs to make money to be able to do this full time. But I have to play it safe. And a lot of that is not doing heroin. You're like, pause, what the hell? It's also not doing short strangles, and it's also not doing short naked calls. And lastly, I want to touch on position sizing. You know, position sizing is really tough because it's also one of those skills that's similar to max loss. I kind of alluded it to it before, just like a few minutes ago as I was talking. But, you know, there's many times where you're like, okay, my max loss for this is $1,000. Say you're in an undefined risk situation, maybe a short strangle or a short naked call. When this hits minus $1,000, I'll just exit. But then when you hit minus $1,000, you end up changing your mind. Now, this isn't only just for, say, these unlimited risk strategies. It could be just very much for any strategy. But when you change your mind on something, sometimes you just don't know. You can be high on the copium, as I like to say a lot of the time, because we're such emotional creatures and we can justify just about anything. We have all of different kinds of beliefs. We have all different ideologies of how we want to do things, and we will absolutely trick ourselves into believing sometimes the wrong thing is the correct thing. So max loss and changing our max loss when we finally hit it is one example. The other one that's a slightly harder to decipher at the time or the context that it happens is position sizing. I've never met a person that's traded that has done really well in their first few trades that didn't end up getting got. And this experience that I've, you know, observed over the 4.5 years I've been doing this is similar to even like intermediate or advanced people, because intermediate and advanced people also try new strategies that might give them confidence if they win the few times first as well. It's just in our human instinct to want more. And I have that same feeling too. I'm not going to pretend like I'm better than anyone, right? Like I'm just aware of that emotion. So sometimes I just choose not to do it, right? Maybe more often than the regular person. But say for example, a new person, intermediate or advanced, we try a new strategy. We learn short naked calls. First few work because hey, the probability of profit on those actually kind of high. So what do we naturally want to do? We want to sell more of them, or maybe closer to the money. We want to do some riskier stuff. We want more bang for our buck because we've been winning. You know, we just started this strategy. It's working so well. Why not just like increase the size of our positions or increase the size of our trades? Why not? It makes sense, right? All of these things where if you had previously said that, hey, I'm going to stick to 1% of my portfolio being my max size of my position, you know, all this responsible stuff kind of goes out the window when you're just have these rose tinted glasses on. And I'm not going to just make fun of or, you know, bring up short naked call people or short strangle people. It's more like cash secured puts too. I see all the time people will try cash secured puts for a few times and it'll work really well. Because granted, hey, at the end of the day, you only get assigned the stock. What's the big deal? And you're winning a lot of money, especially if you're trading stocks like maybe AMD or Costco or NVIDIA. You know, all of these stocks have been doing really well, and you start increasing the amount that you're selling and your position size is going way up. You're like trading so large amounts of money because it's working. And then what happens? Market dips a little bit and you start sweating because, wow, suddenly this strategy is starting to not work. But in your sort of high of getting, you know, a lot of wins very early, you lost sense of position sizing, right? When you first test a strategy, you're not usually going in with like 10 contracts or something, right? Maybe you go in with one, or you go in with two, or maybe, you know, you're going off a percentage. But you start with like 1%, 2%, 3% of your portfolio, and you call it a day. Like you're just like seeing, hey, does this actually work? And you just do your first trade and it's small. Keeping it small, maybe also not like the best advice either, but like going too big should be more obvious to you when it happens. But unfortunately, it doesn't look as big as it is when it's happening because we like justifying wrong decisions to be correct when we want it to be in our favor, right? Like we're winning early, might as well make a lot of money right now. Why don't I just increase my position sizing? Or why don't I change the amount of max loss I'm willing to lose? We're human. The human side of trading gets left out. And we kind of dance around it when we're talking on social media and stuff like on Reddit, on Twitter. The most famous people are like the ones that talk about like technical analysis. They're posting charts. They're talking about like MACD, volume, shelves, RSI, VWAP, you know, correlations against the market, index funds, market manipulators, all these things that, you know, sound very, very textbook, right? And they say all these sayings like market stay irrational, you stay solvent, keep like don't invest money that you can't afford to lose. These are so easy to say, but no one takes the time to remember that, like, dude, we're human. And that's why I think most retail traders actually fail, is because they get tricked into thinking that, hey, this person with like a few thousand followers that says all these quotes, hey, this makes sense. Keep position size the same or keep your max loss consistent. That sounds pretty good. Don't invest money that you can't afford to lose. Yeah, that sounds obvious, but that's just not... it's not applicable to a lot of newer people unless if you're really passionate about it. But I'd say a good majority of people that do join the stock market join for the wrong reason, to just strictly make fast money. And I'm definitely not going to pretend that I wasn't one of those, because I definitely was. I just so happened to get lucky through, I don't know what happened. I just like decided I didn't want to lose money no more. So I looked up daily gain style strategies and it worked. So that's why I've done this for the last 4.5 years. So yeah, I think everyone just needs that like triggering moment. Everyone needs that Ally savings account moment. Again, no shade. No shade at all for anyone that's doing strangles or short naked calls, especially if it's working for you. I would just hate for someone to be sort of inspired and not have this take brought up to them where, like, you know, the person teaching the short naked calls might teach it in a way where they're like, okay, this is really cool because you can bet that it won't go above this number. The chance of it is really low. And if it does, you can just roll it and everything will be fine. Okay. That would be a very bad way to teach it. But I'd assume that if you're trying to shill a strategy like that, that that's probably the best way you'd want to do it. And it's just not, it's not fair to the uneducated learner for someone that's just trying to get started in maybe the Theta Game style strategy. So let me look up a comment that I saw on the original post that inspired this episode. Yeah, I want to say this is the most upvoted comment. It's just the top one. Selling naked is like selling drugs. Great money until you're dead. Crazy. I think that's what inspired my heroin comment earlier, because I had read that reply before I started recording. But yeah, I'd say it's right on the money. No pun intended. And I think that's it. Yeah, I want to say thank you to everyone that's listening to the podcast. You can email me at junie@thetagain.com if you ever get got. You can also just request, like, you know, hey, Junie, I'm writing this to you in private. I'd rather not have this be read on the podcast. And I won't read it on the podcast, you know. There are certain times, like, especially, you know, with this new DJT stock, this Reddit stock now, during times like these, I do get more emails than normal about getting got. I haven't gotten one about Reddit or DJT yet. But I do know that it can happen during times like these. I think the last one that someone that got, I think the last few have been about GameStop. So, you know, just be careful, but know that someone is there, that if you wanted to just write down like a venting letter, you know, you can write that to me at junie@thetagain.com. A lot of people do like a PS at the end saying like, PS, wow, typing this out has made me feel a lot better. It's crazy. You know, you might not have friends or family that understand, trading enough where this makes sense, you know, like, you know, you just wouldn't get it. You know, is this something that you might say to someone that's trying to help you feel better about like a huge option loss? I don't know, man. Anyway, and here's my guarantee as well. If it wasn't obvious enough already, since I've already said it, like, I will never tell you I told you so. It's like not my approach in helping people learn. I think it's like one of the most unproductive things you could ever actually say in like the human language. Again, thanks for listening this far. I am very passionate about this topic and I stand by every word. I think that max or unlimited loss strategies are very bad. Like, I just think that they're bad. I think there's so many better things that you can do in the stock market that involve, you know, much safer opportunities, especially when you're trading with an amount of money that you can't afford to lose and you're doing an unlimited risk strategy. That doesn't sound good to me. I know that you can manage it well, but what happens when you don't? Thank you for listening. I'll see everybody next week. So that was the podcast. And now we're at the end. I'm going to say my outro. But before we get into that, I want to give a huge thank you to my patrons that help support me, especially since I do this full time. And you could, if you want more info, you could go to patreon.com/thetagang. Sometimes there's a seat open. Sometimes there is not. If there's not a seat open, it just means that I'm limiting seats for right now because, you know, maybe there's too many people joining. But for the most part, there should be one seat open for most of the time, because that's just how, you know, I just try to keep from like a mass amount of people joining at once. Because again, the culture of the Discord is something that I really enjoy. You know, I want to preserve the openness of everybody. What you get in the Discord is like these real-time notifications of people uploading trades. You know, patrons see each other's trades. Patrons see my trades. I see their trades. And it's very communal. Right? It's very transparent, and you have to also be sort of vulnerable when you post your losses, because there are comments that come in. People ask, like, what could you have done better? What have you learned here? But it's a good community, and I hate for like a bunch of people that aren't, you know, as welcoming as maybe we are join and then kind of messed it up. So there's some artificial limiting there by me. And it's just something that I'm kind of sticking to for right now, because it's what I care about the most as I'm doing this full time. It's like, if I woke up, my first interaction of the day was like a, a bad communal experience. Like if I woke up and my stream chat was really rude, like all the time, I probably wouldn't stream anymore. Like there's no reason why I would start off with like negative things from people saying, or from people saying negative things like first thing in the morning. And that goes with like Discord. And that really goes with like a lot of things in I think that might apply to your life. If you wake up and the first thing that you're reading is like a negative news piece, there are a lot cooler stuff to look at first thing in the morning, like the sun, not directly at the sun, you know, but you could go outside and you can like, you know, look at the blue sky, look at life. You can just like sit there with your morning coffee, or maybe you're trying to quit caffeine, and maybe you're just there with your cold water trying to start your metabolism early, you know, soaking in the vitamin D. There's lots of cooler things to do than spend the beginning of your day with a negative experience. And that's what I'm trying to sort of keep in check, because, you know, your boy was pretty unhappy at his last job. And I'd say right now, your boy's full-time job of being ThetaGang.com's sole engineer, streamer, podcast host is his dream job. This is literally my dream job. I have to make sure it stays being my dream job. I understand there's going to be some hard days, but, you know, for the most part, I got to keep the minimum bar pretty good or pretty happy. So I want to give a huge thanks for the people that make that happen. That allow me to make this decision in my life for this time in my life. And that's Fancy Wolf, Los Pepes, Mods, Upstream Puddle, Ensis88, Peter, Infinitude, Espresso Bean, Jokewort, EDC, Travella, Desserts, Kevlar22, Bachata Thug, Cubesuki, Nala, J Perkins86, Lewis, BG, Troop947, T-Wall, 3252, LPL, Alexander Kerm, Slow Motion, Rustier, The Jester, Grandpa95, Young Rich, Chicken Dinner, Kaput, Sumatrix, KJ Martin, Statistically Random, Turbo Ricky, Maestro XC, Banadushi, NC Devman, Theta Collector, Tyler LM97, Lord Skeletor, Major Tecomi Elmo, Avrillion, RS Schmitty, YTeen, Danube9000, Danger10, McFly, Husk P, Mr. Integrity, Rooster, King Swift 6, Garrix, Loido, LeBoomer, Bearded Savage, Danghai, Samir, Caveman, Andy V, Arfman, Mememe, Vegeta Plank, Can't Make Money, RL, Maloko, and Maltman 1856. Whew. Yeah, that list getting very long. So thank you so much for everyone that's continuing to support me. And it means a lot. It's so hard to say this every week and not sound like a broken record. But I have to say it just because it's the polite thing you do, but it's what I genuinely mean. Like, I wouldn't be able to do this if it wasn't for people deciding to sign up on Patreon. Like, there's no way that I'd be able to financially make this work. So thank you so much for trusting me, and I'm working really hard on the website, and it means a lot. I have a lot of pride when I work on Theta Gang in public, even if I'm just, like, on my laptop, just, like, I don't know, just kind of sitting there coding along. But just knowing that, like, I'm doing this full time, and it's, like, people might think, oh, this person's, like, working from home but like at a coffee shop, like that's cool, but like they don't know that like I'm coding for my life, basically. Like, this is make or break it if I wanted to do this full time, right? I'm not gonna like pick up a job and then maybe revisit Theta Gang later in a full-time capacity. I don't think that would realistically happen. It's like right now is the time that I need to make this work. And you know what would make this go crazy good is if the market crashed or the market rallied really hard. Then I feel like more prepared than ever for a large influx in traffic. Because right now it's kind of like there are more people suddenly joining the market. You know, website traffic is up. More people are signing up. More people are feeling confident to hop back in. So I'm getting some of that right now. But I still have yet to see, like, you know, this mass amount of people, like, you know, subreddits, like even Wall Street Bets and Theta Gang and options, they have also slowed down from peaks of, you know, everyone was in the market. But yeah, the fact that I'm able to make this much progress in this sort of environment where I'm like, you know, like this squirrel that's like about to go hibernating, and I'm like packing up my nuts and I'm coding this website in preparation for the I don't know, the spring. I don't know how I'm making that analogy work. But anyway, I'm just doing a lot of prep, and I'm making the website better, and I'm thankful for the people that are supporting me right now. It means a lot to me, and it can't be understated. To end today's episode, I want to talk about delivery, okay? And we're not talking about UPS, and we're not talking about FedEx. We're talking about, like, delivery of opinion, okay? So I understand that today, when I was speaking, I was very biased, okay? Because I'm human. I'm very biased to what I observe and what my experiences have been. And that includes, like, what my Twitter feed might be, or that might be, like, what I look at YouTube, or it could be my experiences, including what I reply to in emails, or the trades that I do personally. I developed these biases of, you know, hey, if you don't control your position sizing, then I think you're not as good of a trader as a next person. That's a bias. Some people might not care about position size. So that's just me being very aware, right, that I'm sort of passionate about this stuff, because one of my main missions is to sort of, like, help prevent people from getting got, because there are tragedies like Alex Kerm that happen where traders get got, they don't know what to do, and they end up committing suicide. It's really, really sad, but it has to be said, right? We want to take the stigma out of the word. Suicide is a thing, and, you know, I don't know what day or how you're feeling when you're listening to this, so sorry about being a downer, but it happens, and it's something that I like to prevent, and it's one of the holistic parts of this very capitalistic hobby that I'm in that keeps me going. Is like, I understand that this is a very, like, privileged thing to talk about and to teach and to do, is like trading stocks in the stock market. It's not very fulfilling at, like, the holistic level. Like, financially, like, that's great. Ego-wise, it's also great. Like, I'm able to beat the market every year for the last 4.5 years. That feels great. Like, I feel very validated when I'm able to say that. It fuels my ego. But holistically, without trying to be, like, a good person and being there and hearing other people out, it just wouldn't cut it. I don't think I'd make this a public platform. But I do, because of tragedies like Alex Kerm, or, like, you know, people getting got and then disappearing from the face of the earth. Like, I don't know what they did. I don't know where Storm Will Pass is. I don't know what he's up to. I hope he's fine. I hope he's doing well. Maybe he's not trading anymore and he's in the Bahamas. Maybe he was a millionaire and he was able to lose that much, but he just wanted to take a break, right? That's like the happy path example that I'd like to probably think on the most. So, just digressing, because I went off on a bit of a tangent there. I do that a lot. I'm very biased. And there's nothing wrong with being biased or having preferences, right? Like, you should be proud of, you know, the things that you've been raised with, or the, you know, maybe the things that you've learned. You know, be proud that, you know, you're of this race, religion, political party. But when it comes down to it, there's a reason why places like you know, Wall Street Bets, or any of your favorite subreddits, you know, typically any sort of community, you know, you're not really allowed to talk about things like politics or religion, because there are so many passionate people, and passion is awesome, right? It means that you're able to identify yourself as maybe a member of that thing that you're passionate about, or maybe you just are very energized when you talk about it. This energy that you feel when you talk about something or you take offense on something is so human, and it's raw, and it's beautiful that we get to feel that emotion. Things do get dicey, though, from time to time, and this happens to everyone. It happens to me, it happens to you, it happens to literally everyone. Sometimes we say things and we have the best intentions and we have no idea about the biases. I can have said many things in, like, the 4 years I've done this podcast, okay? I could have said many things with really well intentions, but I could have had a whole lot of bias in there that I'm not aware of. Today, I was very aware of the bias of, you know, me being against, like, not keeping position sizing in check, keeping max loss in check. I'm pretty biased against, you know, unlimited loss trades. This is me being aware of those. And those are pretty easy to pick out, you know, because it's very contextual. But sometimes when you have it very deeply ingrained, because maybe it's how you grew up, or maybe it's the community that you're around the most, that you just kind of say things a certain way, or you might interact with people a certain way because of a certain label, because it's just what you know, and you don't know it's a bias. And bias is not necessarily being a bad thing by default, but it's still a bias. So despite having good intentions, it can still just be received like wrongly by the other party. And that's not your fault, right? It's not your fault that other people don't have, like, I don't know, the patience or the ability to just perceive things as well-intentioned messages all the time. Because it takes a lot of patience to do that, especially on the internet when people are anonymous, pseudo-anonymous, or, you know, maybe sometimes even not anonymous at all. You see all the crazy stuff on Twitter. But it takes a lot to just sit there and just view everything as well-intentioned, and it doesn't do any favors if there's like strong hints of bias in there. So in that, okay, I'm gonna wrap this up. When it comes to delivery, you can have the most well-intentioned thought or well-intentioned message, and it will be just wrongly received by the person on the other side. And that's just a fact of life. Like, no matter what you say, sometimes even people just won't straight up like you. And that's just one of the things that you have to learn. And it's one of the things that I had to learn pretty late in my life. I always thought that, you know, you didn't have to be destined to not like each other. But I actually do think, like, there are just some people that just aren't meant to get along. And it took me a little bit longer to understand that. But for the most part, I do try to believe that the other person is well-intentioned. I think that's why I'm able to sort of moderate my community the way that I'm able to, because I can stay neutral for a very, very long time, much longer than your average person, and also keep up a positive vibe. I think expecting strangers to communicate in a way that I communicate is wrong. I think that's something that I wouldn't, you know, necessarily... It wouldn't be necessarily something that I agree with, right? Like, I wouldn't want some random person to meet to my expectations, okay? But if you're my friend, right? If you communicate a certain way, maybe you're like so rude to servers, like you know that trope. Like, if you know a friend that's rude to servers, you probably aren't their friend for that much longer, right? They're just not probably a good person. If you're my friend, I am actively, you know, acknowledging your energy that you're giving me with energy to you back. And you can feel it. When you're my friend, you feel it. Like, I'm responding to you. I am I'm hanging out with you. I'm doing all these things to, you know, show that, hey, I dig you. You're a cool person. I think you're very nice. I like to continue putting energy into this relationship. Even if it's like strangers on the internet, and that sounds kind of weird, I know, but like from strangers to becoming really close friends over a longer period of time, it's the same thing. And I would expect, okay, so expectations for strangers, bad. Expectations for friends, kind of good, right? Maybe friends will love you no matter what, but you know, that there's always that gray area too. But anyway, expectations for my friends is, if someone has poor delivery, right? Like, maybe you just mention or you ask back in a question of like, hey, maybe elaborate like on what you meant by this, or I felt wronged by this. Can you maybe explain your thoughts on this? That sounds better than maybe saying, going to name calling or saying something egregiously rude. And it's just something that I expect from people that I consider my friends, or the people that I spend my time with, is I want people that are friendly, right? Like, I don't want to waste my time moderating people in my Twitch chat. I don't want to waste my time moderating a Discord. I don't want to waste my time moderating people on a website filled with rude people. Dude, I just want to trade awesome trades with awesome people and, you know, have a good time. When things get rough in my full-time journey, I'm noticing that it has a lot to do with the soft skill stuff. My trading career is great. I was going to say immaculate, but that was just like my ego kind of getting ahead of itself. I am very happy with my trading performance. I'm very happy with the progress that I've made on the website. I'm happy with my consistency on the podcast. I love the growth of the stream. Very happy with the business stuff. Where I'm finding myself struggle the most is when soft skill stuff happen. And this isn't a unique problem either. Like, there are tons of communities online that have a whole bunch of passionate people in their community that have to deal with this, right? Like, that includes being a moderator on Wall Street Bets. That includes being a moderator on ThetaGang. It includes being a moderator anywhere. It includes all the content creators in the entire world, okay? That there's all types of people that are into your content. But when they're in your community, they're surrounded by other people that are passionate about other things. So sometimes conflicts can happen. What I would expect from sort of like my friends is that no matter what, right, we're always being a good example. And this is a much harder thing to do or to say for someone that's at a large company. Like, imagine a CEO of like a 10,000 employee company trying to give a presentation on like, hey, be a great example for your fellow coworkers. Okay, that this is much different than that. Okay, like when you're, you know, supporting me and, you know, interacting with the community and stuff, I'm seeing you as a friend. There's a reason why we are interacting every day, and there's a reason why you're supporting me. It's because you like me enough to do that in the first place. But at the end of the day, we're both choosing to interact with each other. Okay. Otherwise, that's another email. Otherwise, you can just leave, or, you know, I can just like not accept, your support. We both actively choose to be around each other. So we should be the best version possible sort of for each other. And what I would expect from my friends is, if someone were to say something rude, okay, or someone were to do something, I would want my friend to not be there and egg the person on, right? Like, I wouldn't want them to continue trolling the person. I wouldn't want someone to, like, you know, make the other person annoyed, even if maybe the other person went a step too far, okay? This just goes in with, like, a lot of the soft skill stuff that I just really enjoy. It's like, I think there's a lot of admiration I have for people that can just remain neutral in very heated or very crazy situations, right? Like, that's why I think like Air Force pilots are super cool, because they could die any second, but the fact that they need to make these like quick decisions super fast and remain cool is like super, super cool to me. That's like the Navy SEAL type of stuff. There's also like dispatchers, right? On, you know, when I'm watching YouTube videos and I'm hearing good dispatchers, I'm like, wow, that's crazy. But it's this like basically a fascination that I have is like, I really enjoy being around people that have, I guess, like the same amount of patience as me. And I'd want people that I know in my community to be that example and not like give in to what I consider the easy route and maybe like troll someone, right? So if someone is being rude, I think just be the bigger man and continue being that example. Because what if later down the line, right, this person is like, wow, you know, I probably shouldn't have said that and I want to apologize. But making that apology is now super hard because there were other people sort of maybe egging him on and stuff. Or maybe there just wasn't anyone that was egging them on, right? They might have stepped out of line, and it's just maybe it's quiet. No one's making fun of this person for stepping out of line or anything. But then they end up wanting to apologize. Us being a good example and not making fun and just like kind of maybe addressing it, but in a very polite way, were being a good example. And they're like, wow, wow, you know, I messed up, my bad, my B, but wow, this place is really welcoming. So I feel more comfortable, you know, admitting that maybe I was, I stepped out of line. And that's huge. And that's why this also plays into a little bit of, you know, when I talk about naked calls, short strangles, getting got, I always make sure I let you guys know that I'm not going to tell you I told you so, or I'm not going to continue trolling you if you email me telling you get got. I won't do any of that. I'm going to reach you with empathy. I'm going to make sure that you're going to feel okay. And then, you know, just go from there. There's really no use in trying to escalate a situation where both parties don't see eye to eye. So the best default is just be a good example. And that's all I want. I want my friends that consider me as their friend to just be a good example. Like, what would Junie do? Is, you know, Ensis, dude, thank you for saying that. Ensis emails me from time to time. Sometimes we talk about his NVIDIA stuff. It's always a great time when me and Ensis are emailing. But yeah, he sometimes in the headline, he says WWJD. And he says, what would Junie do? And man, the coolest things is having a conflict happen and then having the two people also just like, they don't even have to apologize to each other. They don't even need to say nothing. But it's just like, oh, you know, things go back to normal and we say, you know, differences are differences. I took the most pride in that when I was an engineering manager. As I'm saying that in SpongeBob case, I was an engineering manager for the last 4 years of my tech career. I mean, I'm still in my tech career. I'm on ThetaGain.com now, but in my professional 9-to-5 tech career, I was an engineering manager. And there's many times where I have to settle conflicts. And dude, it is the best when two people have a conflict and you're having like a retro or something. And they're just like, dude, my bad. I was being a butt. We should have just merged that in. I was being too nitpicky. My bad. Yeah, you're right. You know, I understand why you had to make this comment in the code, and I understand it had to go past the linter, so you did pre-commits. Or I don't know, dude. There's just so many things to be upset about. I don't think it should be spent on time with the community that you sort of spend a good majority of your time with, you know, whether it be at your job. You don't want to be hating your coworkers all day, whether if it's in your community. You don't want to be around people that you don't enjoy all day. Whether it's, you know, your jiu-jitsu gym, your ceramic studio, your home. You don't want to be stuck at home with people you don't enjoy, right? Like, some people can't stand their parents. You know, it's super sad, but, you know, sometimes moving out is a great idea. I know that I got closer to my parents when I moved out. Not that I hated my parents, but there is something to be said. When you move out, You get kind of closer to your parents in an emotional way, because, you know, every time you go home, they get a little bit older. And I'm going to talk about something else, because that stuff always makes me kind of tear up. I'm a huge proponent in spending your time intentionally, right? And spending time intentionally means trying to spend as much time as you can on things that you enjoy and spending the least amount of time in things that you don't enjoy. So while I do hope that we can just continue being a good example for, you know, for times that, you know, I might get an occasional troll, you know, I might get an occasional troll in the Twitch stream. I don't want people in my Twitch chat to make fun of the troll. I'll take care of it. If it's like really egregiously bad, might ban them or time them out or something. You know, if it gets egregiously bad in like any of my other sort of communities, whether it be the Discord or the maybe YouTube channels, I don't know, anything like that, I'll take care of it. And it's just something where I would hope that people that are closer to me, that believe that they're my friend, and that they believe they're closer to me, that they just continue being a good example, because I have so much respect for the people that I've known in the Discord and people that have supported me for a long time. Because you could look at it, I'm not going to edit the comment or anything. You can go to my R Theta Gang AMA, and one of the questions was like, what are some tips of how you're able to be so consistent or something, or thank you for the tips, like where did you learn all of this? And in there, I just replied, you know, I was very lucky, and early on I made some, like a lot of friends with internet strangers that helped me learn and grow with them. And those are you guys. Like I wouldn't want to spend my trading time with really anyone else, and it's because I think you guys are really cool people. So that being said, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. This is just a little bit insight into, I guess, like my way of thinking and how I would expect someone that I would call like my friend or someone that I'm close to sort of be a good example. It's a little bit of insight into sort of my past job history. You know, maybe you didn't know I was an engineering manager before, but maybe now it makes a lot of sense. Oh, this guy's in tech and he speaks about emotions a lot and all that stuff. I'm a really good conflict resolver. Very good. Like I should probably make this profession, but maybe I like this because, you know, I get to keep it for fun. Because this is more or less the fun and not so fun part of the job. Like, I don't like handling conflict, even as an engineering manager. I'd rather just, like, check in with people and know that everything's going fine. But most of the time, they are not fine. But, you know, it is nice occasionally when people say, like, you know, things are fine. This one thing could be better, but things are fine. So, yeah. Yeah, I feel good. I feel very, very good. I hope everyone has a great rest of their week. Spend time intentionally this week. Spend on things that you enjoy. Spend less on things that you don't enjoy. And I'll see everyone on the podcast next Monday. Regular scheduled programming is back. Thank you, and bye-bye.